I have just convened a subcommittee on transportation and economic development on Thursday, April the 5th, for the purpose of conducting a work session on Senate Bill 5521, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and a work session on Senate Bill 5537, the Public Utility Commission. But we will start by inviting Mr. Commissioner forward. And as he's getting settled, I will ask Robin to get us all on the same page, if you would.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have in front of you the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation, virtually identical to what I sent to your offices a few days ago, but I prefer to work off from this version so we're all on the same page. Madam Chair, would you like me to start walking through the recommendations, or would you like to
I was going to ask comments from the Labor Commissioner, and then as you start walking through the recommendations, I think we'll take motions on each one of them, and then a concluding motion to deal with the bill in its totality. But as a courtesy to the Commissioner, I would invite any remarks that you have with respect to the LFO recommendation or anything you think the committee needs to know before we proceed with the work session.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, to make it short and sweet, good bills should pass. I love the LFO recommendations.
That's a great American colleague. All right. With that, we'll turn back to Ms. Lamont, who will walk us through the LFO recommendation.
Madam Chair, the first recommendation has to do with the performance measures. LFO has sat down with the Labor Commissioner and identified some issues in terms of the fact that most of the performance measures are processing issues such as timeliness, which are very important, but we would like to work with him to develop some more outcome-focused performance measures. And there is a budget note, which if you have all looked at it, I won't read it into the record. So the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation is to approve the revised performance measures and budget note. The performance measures are attached.
All of you were presented with this data earlier. Any questions about the budget note? Any questions or comments about the performance measures? Then the chair would entertain a motion to move the LFO, the performance measures as presented in the LFO memorandum of April the 5th, 2007.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Any objection? They are adopted.
The next issue is policy option package 130, which partially restores a civil rights timely investigations package with one position, 0.75 FTE, and $87,893 general fund. This position had been cut in the governor's budget, but is partially restored in the co-chair budget to improve the timeliness of investigating workplace discrimination disputes.
Any questions for the professional staff? The chair would entertain a motion on policy package 130.
Madam Chair, I move policy option package 130.
Policy, the LFO recommendation for policy option package 130 has been moved. Any discussion? Any objection? It's adopted.
Madam Chair, the next recommendation involves policy option package 140 to partially restore the wage claim enforcement package with one position, 0.75 FTE, $87,893 general fund. This position was approved as full-time in the governor's budget and partially funded by the co-chairs. There is a budget note associated with this, which directs Bowling to report on the work of its wage claim unit.
Okay, we'll take this as, first of all, are there any questions of the professional staff? Senator Wissett.
On, we're going from one FTE to 0.75 FTE. Doesn't that accumulate a little extra OPE for the law?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have reduced any excess funding that would be in their budget.
Okay. Is that responsive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions about either the package or the budget note? Okay, I would entertain a motion to accept the package with the budget note.
So moved.
It has been moved to accept the LFO recommendation on policy action package 140. Any discussion? Any objection? It's adopted.
Madam Chair, the third recommendation involves policy option package 141. If you recall, a limited duration prevailing wage position was approved by the emergency board. This package makes that position permanent full-time at a cost of $117,191 other funds.
Any questions of the professional staff? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lamond, what when E-Board approved the temporary position, what was the timeline on that? I mean, we follow up, Madam Chair. I think E-Board did a limited duration position for a time period.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was until this. Until they were able to come forward and request the position full-time, all limited duration positions end at the end of the biennium.
Okay. Any other questions? I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of policy option package 141.
Representative Tomei has moved the LFO recommendation with respect to policy option package 141. Any discussion? Any objection? Discussion. Representative Gilman.
There will be no on this policy option package.
Okay. Senator Woods.
I'd like to. We're in discussion.
We are, sir.
Madam Chair, the wage fees that support this, have we had the detailed discussion of the percentage or how much the fee is against this as part of the prevailing wage fee?
Again, Madam Chair, could you clarify that question? I'm not sure exactly what you are asking. This position is being paid out of the fees that are collected for prevailing wage actions.
Thank you. Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Hanna.
The prevailing wage fees will support the biennial operating costs. How much are the fees as a part of the prevailing wage cost? I guess I just don't understand the detail of what the fees are as a percentage of the prevailing wage cost.
I'm going to invite a response from the commissioner and any other folks you want to call
sure.
up.
Chair Johnson, Representative Hanna, I'd be happy to answer that. That fee started in 1995 when there was legislation passed by former Labor Commissioner Roberts, who wanted to do in-state surveys by region before the prevailing wage study to make sure that we do it by 14 different regions across the state and not just adopt the federal survey that's done. And the fee is 0.001% of all prevailing wage projects throughout the state, with a minimum fee of $100 and a maximum fee of $5,000.
Is that responsive, Representative Hanna?
Very. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I follow up?
Follow up, Representative Hanna.
To the commissioner. Does the 14, did you say 14 districts or 14?
14 regions.
Does the 14 region process still work? Is that still the best process?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, when I first became Labor Commissioner, one of the things that I did with the Prevailing Wage Advisory Committee, which I rely on very heavily for any changes we do in prevailing wage, was I asked them, if they could change anything on the survey, on anything else, what would they change? And we went through list after list of what we would change. And the general sentiment of the prevailing wage advisory committee, both business and labor, was that it follows the 14 regions the employment department does. It helps us since the employment department gathers the data, in their gathering of the data, and they didn't see any value in making it a larger number of regions or a smaller number of regions.
One more follow-up.
Representative Hanna.
On the amount of fees that are collected, does the fee exceed the expense? Do the fees collected at the .001 $100 minimum, $5,000 maximum, if they do they exceed? Because I see that we're adding this FTE and funding it with those fees. Do the total fees collected exceed what we're paying for this position?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, the total, there is enough money in the fund to fund this position. There have been other drains on the fund, and there certainly is a bill in to increase the fee for a temporary basis because of some of the drains that have been there on the fund. Partially, the hope is for two things. One is that if a prevailing wage, this particular position, for one, is specifically to do predeterminations. We didn't used to do predeterminations very often. We did about one or two per year. We do over 100 a year now. And the hope is that through the passage of the main prevailing wage bill that's coming through the session, by creating that bright line, that eventually we would not have to do this position, you know, for doing predeterminations, because the line would be bright enough that eventually anybody would be able to tell where the line is, and we wouldn't have to do as many predeterminations. However, you know, even if that legislation passes, it doesn't take effect till the effective date. It's only on contracts that are entered into after that effective date, and there'll still be a bit of a shakedown period. So I believe by next session, you may see a reduction, I hope, in the prevailing wage unit, you know, because of that bright line being clarified.
One more, I can see it in you. Follow up, Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would probably be more of the recommendation to leave this position as a limited duration position rather than making it full time, just given that, you know, it's possible we're going to be looking at adding this, brighten the line, taking it back, and it's always tougher to take back a position given full authority than it is to maintain a limited duration position.
I think I'm going to respond by saying thank you for the explanation of your no vote.
You're welcome.
For what it's worth, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to come back next session and explain how that unit's going.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, we can make sure that that is included in the budget report as a comment. This discussion and the concern that perhaps there won't be an ongoing need for the position, so that it's memorialized.
I think does that satisfy
that's
your
fair.
Concern?
That's absolutely
okay.
Fair.
All right. The motion before us is the LFO recommendation on policy option package 141 as a full FTE, not a limited duration, but with the notation that it will be captured in the budget report by the professional staff. Senator Monroe.
Clarification, Dan. If you didn't have this position, it would be more difficult for you to make sure that prevailing wage law is applied fairly and evenly across the 14 different regions?
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, absolutely. If we didn't have this position, we would not be able to work with local municipalities. My belief is that you should, when you're going into a prevailing wage project, that you should know up front whether it is or isn't, because we're a complaint-driven agency. When we get a complaint, it could be halfway through the project. You could be finished with the project. It could be within 180 days after it's completed. And suddenly we get a complaint, you didn't do it prevailing wage, we discover that it should have been done, and you suddenly have a huge bill. I'd much rather find out up front by doing predeterminations and let people know going in whether it is or isn't.
Follow-up, Senator Monroe.
So it'd be less likely that you'd face litigation over whether or not you had properly applied prevailing wage laws?
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, absolutely we'd face less litigation. We'd actually, and so would the local municipalities, you know, that are entering into these contracts who end up litigating with us.
One more follow-up, Senator Monroe.
This eliminating this position would not change Oregon's prevailing wage laws. It would just affect the application of Oregon's prevailing wage laws. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. And as long as we're all piling on, now I suddenly feel the spirit moving in me.
You can fight it, honest.
just one, One of the things that that became very clear during the interim was, I think, a lack of clarity between your agency and sister agencies, particularly Oregon Economic and Community Development, about how to make the issues surrounding predetermination and issues surrounding Oregon's prevailing wage abundantly clear to grant recipients from that agency. And I'm just looking for something at this point, or to put you on notice that we'd like to get it sometime in the future, about what initiatives the Bureau of Labor and Industries is undertaking to make sure that Oregon Economic and Community Development builds into their contract documents and into their discussions with potential recipients of public money exactly what the expectations are with respect to prevailing wage and the application of those funds.
Well, Madam Chair, we have absolutely worked with housing to make sure that happened over the last two to 3 years to make sure they know about it. It's we're not with Oregon Economic Development, it's not been going as well, but we intend to make sure that that does happen over time.
I think that it needs to be just abundantly clear to recipients of public money what the expectations are with respect to prevailing wage. Any other discussion on this issue? Okay. Objections would be Representative Gilman, Representative Hanna, Senator Whitsitt. And policy option package 141 is approved. All right, Robin.
Madam Chair, members, the final recommendation involves policy option package 151, which begins the process of implementing an initiative to integrate apprenticeship programs with state workforce development initiatives. There is a budget note whose focus is making sure that the agency reports back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee or other appropriate committee prior to the start of the next legislative session on how this initiative has worked, including the number of people involved, the schools, how the schools were selected, so that the legislature has a clear idea about whether or not to expand or eliminate this effort.
Before we begin the panel discussion, Mr. Commissioner, I would welcome your comment on preliminarily what you're thinking about the criteria for the selection of the schools, because I think this is a highly desirable program and certainly addresses some of the concerns that many of us have had about the elimination of the career technical programs in high schools, and are interested in knowing what your current status of thinking is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With me is Steve Sims, the head of the Apprenticeship and Training Division, who's been working with some of those criteria and working with some of the local municipalities that have been expressed interest in having that pilot program, and he can best answer that question.
And let me just, before you begin, Mr. Sims, you said that, the commissioner introduced you, he said that you've been working with some of the communities that have expressed interest. I'm going to want to know, what was the vehicle to let communities know that there was an opportunity to express interest?
Of course, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, committee member Stephen Sims. I'm the administrator for the Apprenticeship and Training Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The criteria that we have developed have been developed in conjunction with the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and the Governor's Workforce Policy Office. In addition to the very specific thing we're looking at is creating a pathway to transition students from high school to adult working careers, particularly the Governor's Office of Workforce Policy wants to look at broader transitions, not just high school, but how do we move people up career ladders. So a number of the factors that were identified involved our ability to integrate with workforce partners. So there is a requirement that we work with local workforce boards to determine whether through their youth boards they've already got initiatives in place, to work with apprenticeship committees in those regions to explore whether they have established relationships with school districts in the regions that they operate in, and also to eventually report back to the state board to see what's coming out out of the State Youth Policy Board with respect to programs that are developing. So a lot of the criteria, and unfortunately I did not bring copies of those criteria with me, I'd be happy to get them down to the committee as soon as I get back to Portland. In addition to that, the criteria deal with the existing programs that high schools have. Our research and experience, which has basically come from our field representatives in each of the regions we work in, determining what programs, what apprenticeship committees are already doing with high schools, they kind of know what's going on, but what we're finding is a number of school districts have programs where they attempt career exploration in the industrial and construction trades, but don't really have a firm program. For example, they may do visitations, but there's nothing else in addition to that. They may have approved vocational ed curriculum in the school district, but it's not articulated to anything. So the other criteria is to make sure that the school districts we work with have the necessary curriculum in place. As far as letting the school districts know about that, it's been informal so far because we haven't had staffing and funding. We're going out and just having our field reps communicate with the school districts in their area to find out what is there. The long-term goal, once we get an idea of what's there, what school districts are in a position to make this connection, we'll analyze what's there for the two pilot programs. As Commissioner Gardner has long stated, one needs to be in an urban area, one needs to be in a rural area. We're going to look at the ones that are furthest along with that connectivity, both with their regional workforce board and with their curriculum and their relationship with apprenticeship committees, and try to develop those programs.
Thank you very much. Representative Shields.
Mr. Sims, I assume that at the end of the day, once you work through the criteria, that there will be some kind of RFP process. Is that what you're anticipating?
Madam Chair, Representative Shields, I don't know if we've gone as far as to look at an RFP process right now. I think that's certainly something that we can consider. I think the biggest thing is to look for where the probabilities of success are and have a discussion with the boards individually and in consultation with the Office of Community Colleges and the Governor's Workforce Policy Office to determine where the highest probability of success is. Given the relatively short timeline attached to our agreement with the Governor's Office and with the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, i.e., we need to designate those two schools by June 30th, I don't know if we'll be able to do a formal RFP process, so I believe the goal is going to be to make the analysis, determine where the best fits are that we can make in the short term, and get those programs established.
I think what you may be sensing here, Mr. Sims, is some pent-up desire to be able to influence your decision. I one of the other criteria that I would hope that you would take into account is leverage. And I know that we all speak from our own parochial perspectives because that's what we know the best. But I'm recalling three weekends ago, when I stood next to John Chandler as the home builders were giving a $15,000 check to a high school in my district, to beef up their construction trades. And so I think you're perhaps seeing some interest among all of us to figure out how you're going to do this and not make 88 other people unhappy.
Madam Chair, if I may, I certainly understand that. The demand and interest is not just pent up among the members of this committee. As we talk to school districts, everyone's saying, how can we get on board? And with short time frames and limited resources, it's difficult to get everyone on board at once. We believe that if we take those school districts that have the most infrastructure in place right now, you've got a relationship with your local workforce board, you have the curriculum in place, you have relationships with your apprenticeship committees, we can quickly develop the model for those two programs. And maybe, even though I believe the way that program option package is written, we say two pilot programs in this biennium. My goal, and as I met with my staff yesterday, I see no reason why we can't get four or five programs started during the course of this biennium if we get it right with respect to all of the various pieces that need to fit together.
You've just touched right on it, if you get it right, because you're going to be looking at us or us-like creatures next session, who I think will be scrutinizing the criteria aggressively. Everybody can take no for an answer if they've had a square shot at the process, and I think we're going to be quite eager to know what did that process look like and what chances did we have to get our schools up to bat. Senator Whitson, and then come back to Representative Schultz.
Again, will the apprenticeship pilot program be separate and apart from current union-operated apprenticeship programs, or will it be an extension of one or more of the existing apprenticeship programs?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, there are approximately 28 training facilities across the state. What we're trying to do is match up an apprenticeship training facility with a school district that wants them. Some of those training facilities are community college, some of them are unions, some of them are open shop. It will be, whether it's in a union or an open shop facility or community college, separate and apart from other things that those organizations do, and solely there for the purpose of teaching those young people from a high school, you know, the basic shop skills, the vocational technical training that we're trying to give them to make sure that they have that exposure.
Thank you.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to get on the record. I'm very familiar with the work that Mr. Sims does and the staff doing a great job in not only apprenticeship programs but pre-apprenticeship and bringing a diverse group of people into the apprenticeship area. I just wanted to put on the record, though, that I'd be more comfortable with you taking a couple of extra months to ensure that everybody had a fair shot as opposed to rushing to get a couple, you know, meet a deadline to have it done a couple of months earlier.
Madam Chair, Representative Shields, I will certainly have a conversation with the Governor's Policy Workforce Policy Office and the Office of Community College and Workforce Development. They've signed an interagency agreement with us to provide us with $40,000 in this biennium to start. And as soon as we can receive the funds from them, we will start. I'll talk to them about maybe pushing some of the timelines back a couple of months so that we aren't faced with a situation where someone feels that they didn't have a fair opportunity to put their proposal on the table.
Mr. Sims, will that agreement stay in place? I mean, under the current framework of the co-chair's budget, community colleges are feeling a certain amount of stress, and the workforce investment money was a third of what the governor had in his budget. So will your agreements hold based on a co-chair budget?
Madam Chair, the agreement is based upon the co-chair's budget as it stands right now. The contribution for the end of this biennium, I believe, is fully from CCWD and from the Department of Education. For the next biennium, I believe, off the top of my head, we're relying upon for the FTE and program funding, I believe we're relying upon the workforce system for one-third of those funds, and the balance will come from the general budget. The way our agreement with the other agencies is written is depending on whether or not we've met the expectations and performance measures in our agreement, additional funding from the workforce system is contingent. So I believe when we come back in 2 years, we will need to show not only the workforce system, but this body, that we have fulfilled our promise and have the potential for growth and expansion.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just concerns me, as we've heard here, that I haven't heard an exacting at all development of the criteria for how this would be spent. Therefore, it concerns me how we developed a budget. I think I've heard you say, you know, we've talked about several schools being involved, and we hope we can add a number more. And so I start doing in my mind, how do you get the math? How do you plan for a program that you've asked for a specific amount for when the criteria seem to be somewhat vague? And as you say, I think you could bring more of that, but that then we can add more. If we didn't know the cost and we weren't asking for a specific amount, how are we going to add more given what's been requested? I just feel a certain vagueness to this, and maybe you can help me with that.
serve you, Madam Chair, Representative Hanna. With respect to the funding that we will be receiving, it's approximately the equivalent of one FTE and only about $40,000 for program work to actually be extending to purchase curriculum, develop materials, issues such as transportation, etc. So the budget that we have to work with is exceedingly slim to begin with. But the real issue that I believe you're getting at is, what's it going to cost to do this? Well, that's a difficult question to answer. I think the cost right now, other than the staffing for it, is going to be in leveraging coordination, taking what apprenticeship programs already have in place and they're willing to put on the table, putting what school districts already have in place, putting that on the table, taking what local workforce boards are willing to invest. So the reason why the position is important is they're going to be bartering and leveraging those limited resources to turn this into a successful program. But again, I will be happy to get the criteria that we've worked on so far, because I think that's something you need to review.
Thank you. And your comments are helpful, just to get around it a little bit more.
Okay. All right. At this point,
Madam Chair, I have one more package.
No, but we haven't had a
vote. Oh, that's good.
I can't remember with all this discussion if we had a motion.
No, we didn't.
The Chair would entertain a motion on policy option package 151.
Madam Chair, I recommend the LFO recommendation on policy option package 151 and the budget note.
Representative Tomei recommends the LFO moves the LFO recommendation on policy option package 151 to include the budget note. Any discussion? Any objection? It's approved. All right, Robin?
And the final package is an LFO analyst adjustment. The co-chairs approved a $20,000 general fund reduction in services and supplies to partially offset the cost of restoring the wage claim enforcement position. And that reduction is distributed equally between the wage and hour and civil rights division based on assessment by the agency that these divisions have the ability to approve the reductions.
Any questions of the professional staff? I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I recommend that we accept the LFO recommendation regarding policy package 801.
Representative Tomei has moved the LFO recommendation with respect to package 801. Any discussion? Any objection? It's adopted.
Madam Chair, I would like a motion to approve the budget for the Bureau of Labor and Industries as detailed on the attached work session action report.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the budget for the Bureau of Labor and Industries as detailed on the attached work session action report.
Representative Tomei has moved the LFO recommendation for the Bureau of Labor and Industries as detailed on the attached work session action report. Is there any question or discussion? Any objection?
I will be giving a courtesy yes vote, but withhold the right on the floor. It may change.
Representative Gilman will be giving a courtesy yes vote. Any other? Senator Whitsitt, same, courtesy yes vote, but reserves the right to vote differently on the floor.
Madam Chair, I just want to throw this out. I haven't been back to my office. We had some discussion about additional information from the co-chairs. I was told when I was on the floor it was back there. If that's all there and it's good, I'll be okay with this. If not, I'll have the courtesy vote as well.
Okay, so the record will reflect that Representative Hanna will offer a courtesy yes vote, but reserves the right to change his vote on the floor. Okay, any other discussion or vote explanations or comment? So the record reflects Representative Gilman, Representative Hanna, and Senator Whitsitt as courtesies today. And thank you very much. Last committee action is to approve the amendments to SB 5521 and then move it to full Ways and Means. Do you have any comment, Robin?
Madam Chair, when I distributed the draft recommendations, I didn't have the dash one amendments. They are now attached to your material, so we can entertain a motion to approve the dash one amendments.
Let's go ahead and do that. Any questions, first of all, about the dash one amendments? It's just purely a mathematical calculation. Any questions about those? Okay, there being none, Representative Tomei moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 5520.
Absolutely.
Any discussion?
5521, Madam Chair.
Oh, 5521. Any discussion? Any objection? They are approved. And now?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 5521 as amended to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei has moved the amended Senate Bill 5521 to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Any courtesy? Representative Hannah is a courtesy. Senator Whitsitt is a courtesy. It's approved. Okay. Thank you, colleagues.
Carriers.
We need carriers. I look for volunteers first, and there being none stepping forward, we'll assign it. We have Representative Shields on the House side, and we have Senator George. Were you waving or were you volunteering?
No, I can't carry it.
I'm sorry.
He said I was full of it, but not on full.
Not on full. Senator Whitsitt, given your courtesy status, I'll go ahead and do this one.
All right,
cool, that's fine.
And do you want to carry it in full or have Representative Shields do it?
I'll let Representative Shields carry it in full.
Oh, thank you very much, Madam. And
all right. We are now having the switching of the LFO. And inviting Ms. Dyster up for the purpose of working a work session on Senate Bill 5537. I close the work session on Senate Bill 5521 and open work session on Senate Bill 5537. And with that, Ms. Dyster, any comments?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I passed around an updated version of your work session documents. Should be dated March 30th. The cover memo was dated April 2nd. So please make sure that that's the one you have. If you don't have that copy, I have extras.
Good.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, you want to make some opening comments?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $140,626,996 total funds for the Public Utility Commission and 123.5 full-time equivalent positions.
Before we start through the LFO recommendation, I would invite Mr. Willis to come up and make any comments to the committee that might be relevant to our work session. Good afternoon, sir. And Mr. Upadhyay with you. Good afternoon, Satish.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Andrew Rick Willis with the Public Utility Commission. We have reviewed Ms. Dyser's recommendations, and they will require us to tighten our belt some, but they are workable, and we support her recommendations.
Okay. Mr. Upadhyay, any comments from you?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, I think we'll employ the same procedure as we did the last time. We'll just soldier through this policy option by policy option. And so if you want to commence with 101, Ms. Dyster, we're ready to go.
Okay. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation does not include policy option package 101. You'll remember that this is a revenue-only package that is dependent upon the passage of legislation. Therefore, if legislation is to pass, we could go into the budget and reconcile it at the end of session if necessary.
I would entertain a motion on the LFO recommendation with respect to package 101.
I recommend that we accept LFO's recommendation on policy 101.
Representative Tomei has moved the LFO recommendation on package 101. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, very similar story with Package 102, Utility Safety and Reliability. I believe you'll recall testimony that said that where the commissioner mentioned that it may not look like this particular piece of legislation had a particularly helpful prognosis. Regardless, this is package, once again, that's revenue only, dependent upon the passage of legislation. If legislation is passed, we can go in and adjust the budget at the end of session, but at this time, the Legislative Fiscal Office is not recommending this package.
I would entertain a motion on the LFO recommendation with respect to Package 102.
Madam Chair, I recommend that we accept LFO's recommendation on Policy Package 102.
Representative Tomei has moved the LFO recommendation on Package 102. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Policy Option Package 104, again, is dependent upon the passage of legislation. This is, again, a revenue-only package with no corresponding increase in expenditure limitation. It's dependent upon the passage of legislation. If it is passed, we can adjust the budget. LFO is not recommending this package at this time.
Okay. Any question of the professional staff? I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO's recommendation on Package 104.
Representative Tomei recommends the LFO or moves the LFO recommendation with respect to Package 104 to decline. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Policy Option Package 801 is an LFO analyst adjustment. You will see this on your work session action report. Policy Option Package 801 is an LFO analyst adjustment to better reflect the amount of revenue and corresponding non-limited special payments that PUC expects to make for the Oregon Universal Service Fund. And it's an adjustment of about $4,020,000. If you look on page 3 of the work session action report, it is detailed there. And basically, it just is a better reflection after talking with staff of what they actually expect to take in and pay out with regard to that particular fund, to true up the numbers with what's actually occurring.
And your explanation of this starts at the bottom of the page under utility program that starts LFO recommends $114 million. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what we're going to call this is the LFO analyst adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Package 801.
Package 801. All right. Representative Tomei.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee accept LFO's recommendation on Package 801.
Okay. Representative Tomei has moved the LFO analyst adjustment Package 801. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Okay. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, the last package is Package 802. That is the 2% reprioritization. This is, again, a package which takes services and supplies savings and personal services savings across several agency programs to reflect savings in services and supplies and savings from OPE calculations as they relate to part-time staff. And the total amount of that particular reduction is... Oh... it's 200. If we go program by program, you'll see it first detailed on. If you look at your work session action report, that's probably the easiest way to line out exactly where these reductions are taking place. If you look on page 3 of your work session action report, you'll see a reduction of $18,671 for the utility regulation program. You will see a reduction of $271,256 in the residential service protection program, and that is constituted by $250,000 reduction for savings related to renegotiated equipment pricing and efficiencies, and additional services and supplies of $19,827, as well as personal service reductions in the amount of $1,429. And that package then is continued through to the policy and administration program, on page 7 of your work session action report, where it amounts to $42,154.
All right, colleagues. Representative Tomei, I would accept a motion with respect to the analyst adjustment package 802.
I move that we accept the analyst adjustment of package 802.
Representative Tomei has moved the analyst adjustment with respect to package 802. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. This should now bring us to performance measures.
It should.
Okay. Colleagues, attached to the report, you have the performance measures. Any comment about them, either by Mr. Willis or by the professional staff? Mr. Willis, you're fine? Okay.
I would just mention, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that the performance measures that you have before you attached in these worksheets reflect some changes that were made by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee over the interim, particularly with respect to those programs that are administered by the Energy Trust of Oregon. And you can see where adjustments were made in the targets with the bracketed and then replaced below in measures 13, 14, and 15, as well as measure 17.
And it should come as no surprise that I have a question about this. Go to number 17, Mr. Willis, if you would. Energy Trust Administrative Efficiency. And it talks about administrative and program support costs as a percentage of annual revenues. I am very curious what items are included in administrative cost calculations. Are contracts with professional providers included in that? What all does the Energy Trust include in administrative costs? And you may not be prepared to have a thorough answer right now. And I am prepared to go ahead and adopt the performance measures. But I'd like to have in writing what's calculated in the administrative costs for the Energy Trust.
Madam Chair, I will do that. I'll get that to you.
Good. And particularly, I want to focus on outside contracted professional services. And in fact, what I'd really like is a list of all the outside contracted professional services and the prices for those contracts that the Trust is engaged in right now.
I will provide that, Madam Chair.
Great. Senator Whitson.
If I could add one more request to your request.
Sure.
It would be if a piece of those contracts was done on an RFP.
Mr. Willis, did you hear that?
I did.
The method of solicitation, competitive RFP, or if they were negotiated.
I will provide that as well.
Great. Okay. Any other questions or comments about the performance measures? Representative Tomei, I would entertain your motion to adopt these.
So moved.
Okay. Representative Tomei has moved adoption of the performance measures as presented in the LFO memorandum dated April the 2nd. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Okay.
All right. I've got to get back on the right page. Now we're down to the final motions.
Do you need to recommend bill amendments?
All right. Thank you.
It's double-sided. Sorry about that.
There we are. Okay.
Okay.
So we're going to need the amendments that are mathematical calculations. The chair would recommend the chair would move the LFO recommendation to amend Senate Bill 5537 on line 10 with the appropriate corrections in the numbers line 12, the appropriate corrections in the numbers in line 13. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Okay. The amendments are adopted. And so we need a final motion. Representative Tomei, I would accept your final motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we send Senate Bill 5537 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 5537 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with the DuPass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Gilman.
Yes, courtesy vote again.
Conditional yes. Joined by Representative Hanna and joined by... Nope. Okay. The record will reflect a conditional yes on the part of Representative Gilman and Representative Hanna. Any other objections? So ordered. And now we need carriers. Senator Whitson on the Senate side, and to Fole, and volunteer on the House side. Representative Evans. Okay. Any other business to come before the committee? Any final comments?
I feel like I'm rich.
Then we stand adjourned.
Thank you for this Easter scarf.
Happy Easter.